Oh, good morning. It's Michael Cathcart here on RN. You're very welcome to Books and Arts Daily. Well, what did Jane Austen really look like? We'll find out shortly, and you might be a bit surprised. And the Queensland Literary Awards, they're back, and they're accumulating cash for the prize. We'll find out how they're doing it. But first up, there's big goings on in Sydney. Yes, the 18th Biennale of Sydney opens to the public today, which means that all over the harbour city there are crowds coming face to face with art. The Biennale is Australia's largest contemporary visual arts event. There are more than 100 artists from 44 countries, all showing their work at harbourside locations right across the city. Almost half of these works have been specially created for this event. The co-artistic director is Gerald McMaster, and he joins us from Sydney. Hi, Gerald.
Good morning. How are you?
Very, very well. So it's a big day. Any last-minute hitches?
At this point yesterday, we were wondering with all the rain coming down, but I felt, well, the rain is actually a good sign. You know that when I woke up this morning, I thought, that's why we had some rain yesterday. So I think that was the only hitch. I think everything is moving forward. I think that the audiences and visitors are going to come through, are going to be quite amazed. And so at this point, all fingers are crossed, and there's usually sometimes last-minute technical glitches, but everybody's optimistic that it's going to go smoothly.
Nothing a bit of gaffer tape can't fix.
No.
So you're the co-director of the Biennale. You're collaborating with Catherine De Zager. And this is not the first time you've worked with Catherine. I know you've had a big project at the Art Gallery of Ontario in Toronto. So collaborations are a bit of a theme this year.
Well, it began out of the idea of collaboration because there was both of us that we've known each other for many, many years. And while we were at the Art Gallery of Ontario in Toronto, we felt that at some point down the line, we're going to have to do a big project together. And we began discussing it. We didn't know what it was going to be. Sydney came by and you know, the next thing you knew, we were actually collaborating. So it really began out of the conversation, two people talking, and I think it grew from there. And so it became almost a starting point, though, not the end point, because we began talking more, where are we going to go with this? You know, where are we going to take this project even further? And so the conversation began very, very quickly, actually, because, you know, we realized we had a year and a half to do this enormous project. So it just began. And thank God for Internet and Skype and, you know, all those kinds of things that I just keep wondering. When the Biennale started back in the early 70s, you know, it took them months just to communicate with an artist, and you never know if they were participating. Today, it's instantaneous, you know. So, but that's the sort of notions that we're based on, the not just fast connectivity, but just connectivity with the world around it. And that's what draws us together, I think. And it's been quite significant when we think of the 21st century and how we are connected. And so that became an important part of our ideas is just that the interconnectivity of all.
So you've got a theme for the show or a sort of slogan, which is all our relations, which I guess plays into what you've just been discussing.
Exactly. We felt at the beginning, and most often we're asked, is there a theme to this? And we felt that if we were bound by a theme immediately, then it meant that we'd have to it would narrow our choices, and going out to see artists and visiting artists would really narrow our focus. So we felt, let's keep it open-ended, and it's not the usual approach to taking to do exhibitions. But it's because it was based on notions of relations and connectivity, we thought it's going to be fairly organic. We're going to proceed in different directions. We're going to, at all points along the way, Catherine and I felt we needed to communicate with each other just as a double check, right, and talk to each other about the artists that we're finding and then the curators and
sure.
The collectors and everybody we're meeting along the way. You make those really fine distinctions and connections, and pretty soon you start to see small patterns taking place. So ultimately, when, you know, the 18th Biennale arrives and we look at this larger picture, we've got this puzzle in place, and it's just a beautiful puzzle.
Well, let's talk a bit about what this puzzle or this bigger picture tells us about where we've come to in the 21st century with the arts. Now, you've issued a statement, a curatorial statement, which makes a very big claim about the dominating principle of the 20th century. You say it was, in the arts, I mean, you say it was a century in which the arts largely adopted principles of separation, negativity and disruption as strategies of change, and you're flagging the idea that you think something might have shifted. Can you speak to that a bit?
It was, you know, when we reflect back on what in the world, the conditions in which we just came out of in the 20th century, for example, I know it's a big jump to go from one century to another, and it's you assume that there's an immediate change. There isn't. I think changes began in the 60s and in the 70s and in different parts of our society, but I think they were revolting and trying to attempt to think differently about how the conditions of modernity had led us to this. And so as we moved in the last several decades, the impending changes towards a reconnection, a new model of how we're working together, the impacts of global environmental conditions, global climate change, I should say, the impact of social media, migration, immigration, war, pestilence, all these have go beyond borders and boundaries that have been set so tightly. And I think that
I want to interrupt you because I want to make this more specific. So you're suggesting, are you, that there's been some kind of paradigm shift, that there was sometime in the 20th century a practice that was confrontational, disruptive, or about alienation and distance, and that somewhere along the way we have shifted. Can you give me an example of, you know, a prominent example of the kind of art you're talking about as typifying that 20th century approach? And then we'll talk about how this exhibition takes us to somewhere new.
Well, you know, when we think of the kind of, if you're familiar, of course, with art history, there's a kind of an art history that has a narrative that seems to flow from a particular point somewhere in Europe and goes in particular directions around the world. And a very, very tight narrative discourse that is quite narrow, and those that don't fall within that narrative discourse, of course, are marginalized. And I think this is what perhaps the fissure that was being created in the 60s and 70s, what you have is artists responding and reacting to particular paradigms and constructions of art. And so they began introducing new ways of looking at the world, whether it was by performative arts, whether it was by just new media, reacting to traditional narratives, a very tight narrative. And so ultimately, past beyond the 1970s, you have an art world that is trying to find a significant narrative of how to describe that, and it's been very confusing to everybody. They're saying, where do we fall along this line? And I think it was really in reaction to that we're now shifting out of the century. We went through a decade of identity construction and multiculturalism, for example, feminism, new waves of feminism. So the discourse has started to fracture even more to a point where we're now looking at a sort of a global view that we're still trying to answer, what is that? And I think that artists are responding in ways, curators are looking, curators are trying to describe something, perhaps it's that tries to typify what is happening today. And I think it's a very complex situation, and biennales that are now fairly global, of course, and where artists are being looked at from around the world, you know, are much more aligned to, I think, new thinking today. I think they've relaxed a bit somewhat, and I think they're challenged by new ideas and new issues. And so I think it's, for us, when we were coming out of this and thinking about what was going on in the 20th century, we felt there was indeed a shift. And I think that the art was really much, and curators around the world were looking at something quite new and quite different. I think that that's the kind of model we're thinking about, these notions of relations. And I think that those boundaries, those very solid and fixed boundaries that have been set up, are now disintegrating. And so we have to think now, instead of a kind of an analytical approach where things are breaking down, to one that's recomposing. You compose things, you bring things back together again. The fragments start to come, and we look at those fragments in a collective way.
Well, there's a work in the Art Gallery of New South Wales which typifies this. I should say we're talking to Gerald McMaster, who is the co-artistic director of the Biennale, the 18th Biennale, which has just kicked off today in Sydney. So, as I say, in the Art Gallery of New South Wales, there is a man who's literally mending things.
Yes, his name is Li Mingwei. He's a Taiwanese artist currently living in New York City. It's called the Mending Project. And the idea behind that was visitors who come to the museum with a piece of torn clothing will leave it there for him to mend. But it's not just leaving it there for him to mend. So often he will ask, it's situated like I am right now. I'm sitting at a chair at a table, and there's another chair across from me. It's currently empty, but people who come to the museum will be asked to sit down. And I think that's really a significant part of what we're asking at the Biennale is this is an experiential, interactive, relational kind of Biennale. And I think that work fairly typifies sort of the approach that we're looking at. And so Mingwei will have people come in and sit down, and they will mend this little piece of clothing that is torn. But it is through that process, not just the mending, but it's the mending, perhaps, of the relational aspect, the storytelling, right? And he often will give us some anecdotes of the people that he actually meets, because you have to sit there for some time and enter into engagement with the artist, and it works back and forth. And that's really, again, goes back to the sense of conversation and dialogue, which begins the relationship. We begin to establish our identity. I speak to you on the other side. I don't see you right now, so it's difficult to establish that identity except through our voice. But it's that relational aspect of seeing somebody, you learn a bit more, and I think that that really goes a long way to establishing each other's identity through difference. And the Mending Project really constructs that situation.
Another work that's on at the Biennale, which seems quite charming actually, sounds like this. That's a lovely sound. It's wind chimes. Tell me about this, Jared.
Yes, I'm surprised you got the sound for that. It's a remarkable piece in which I'd say about a year ago I was in New Zealand, and I was asking a gallery dealer about some artists who would respond in an interactive way. And I just, as I kept asking the questions and more so, she said, well, there's this young artist who you might be interested in. So I did meet this young artist. Her name is Tiffany Singh from Auckland. And I had coffee with her one evening, and she said, if you're going down to Wellington, which I was, there is a piece that I did there that's in the Dowse Art Museum. So when I arrived at the Dowse, it was in their courtyard, and up in the sky, basically, were all these wind chimes, just lovely, you know, that sound we just heard a moment ago. I could just hear the sound, and it was beautiful. The title of the piece is a Buddhist proverb that says, knock on the sky, listen to the sound. It's just a lovely concept. Mm-hmm. So we have set it in two places, actually. The first place is a large construction, which you will hear the ongoing sounds because it is in an open-air space on Cockatoo Island, which is, of course, one of our major venues. And then another part of it is located in another venue called Pier 2-3, which is another important one of the beautiful piers on just off the rocks, and visitors will be asked to pick up a wind chime, because you'll see them hanging there, take it home, and then bring it back to the island, Cockatoo Island, somewhere. We've already got a predetermined space site for them, but the idea there is you connect up the notions of the pilgrimage, you know, and it's through the pilgrimage, as you probably might be aware, you have an experience, you know, along the way you have various experiences that really construct who you are as an individual. So the pilgrimage becomes a way of constructing the self and then eventually finding the self, because then you kind of, you've created something and then you release it in the wind chime, you hang it in a tree, and then all your best wishes, your thinking is then released into the world. So it was a beautiful project that we were quite, you know, very simple, But at the same time, I think it was quite powerful in its notions of how we discover ourselves and how an artist asks new questions of us. Just in very simple ways, we gather ourselves together and present ourselves in a very, very open air kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So I think the simplicity of something like that, I think, can come back to us in ways that we've never realized we are in.
Now, talking of Cockatoo Island, I know you've got the actor Rhys Muldoon doing audio tours for kids, which sounds to me like a great idea. It means that kids can enjoy the artworks by listening to kid-friendly descriptions.
Hey there, I'm Rhys Muldoon, and I'm here to take you on a journey through this amazing exhibition. I bet you didn't think you could see an art exhibition on an island, but here you can. Let me be the first to welcome you to the Biennale of Sydney. This exhibition features 102 artists from all over the world. These artworks travelled by boat and plane to be here. Some were made in faraway places, and some were even made right here on the island. Speaking of the island, this is Cockatoo Island.
I just love that voice. Rhys Muldoon is such a fabulous actor, isn't he? So warm. It really does take you in. So that sounds like a great dimension. And what about Indigenous artists? What have you got in that line?
It was a good question. You know, when we think of Indigenous artists around the world, they're often, as I was saying, part of the discourse where they're marginalized because they don't quite fit into the pattern of Western art history. So the question becomes, how do they fit? How do we count for them? And certainly in Australia, for example, for generations you've had Aboriginal artists. They're just there, but they don't fit the pattern of art history. But I think that we are re-examining that, and I think we're asking new questions because they do bring a new way and a different way of seeing the world. And I think for Australia, you know, when the world thinks of Australia, quite often they might think of Aboriginal art. So it really identifies to your country, perhaps at the detriment to other artists to say, well, what about us? But significantly, I think Aboriginal Indigenous artists of Australia and other parts of the world bring new ways of seeing the world. Some, of course, they're based on ancient ideas, ancient techniques sometimes. Certainly contemporary artists now in different countries are responding to ancient techniques and skill that are bringing it into the present. So the past is always very much a part of the present because that's how we view the world around us, from the present tense, looking to the past, looking at others across time that's coeval with us today, or trying to think of the future. But Indigenous art, I think, is so located in notions of the land. And I think for us, the notions of the land are so such an important part of who we are today. And I think asking questions of the earth, because it is a finite earth, and how we're going to treat it, and the consequences if we don't treat that earth the way that it should. And so it's just asking us new questions to consider, what is that relationship we have to the land, to the earth, and what is it? How is it speaking to us? And we have so many artists, not just Indigenous artists asking the questions, we have so many other artists that are asking those key questions. And I think people, audiences that are going to come to the Biennale are not, certainly much more aware of the environmental conditions that are out there. But I think Indigenous artists who are significant, a fairly significant part of this, but they're not identified as such. I know in some instances they are. They're very proud of who they are. And sometimes you will see, of course, they're Indigenous just by their work, you know, but it's not the point of the Biennale to just pinpoint them as different. You know, they are very much a significant part of the web, this interrelated web, and they're like everyone else. They bring new questions, new ideas, and that's what contributes to the success of all our relations.
Mm. Now, briefly, Gerald, we're talking to Gerald McMaster about the Biennale in Sydney. You've also got a whole range of artists' talks, and I guess we're used to hearing writers talk about their works at writers' festivals, but visual artists often want to say things like, I'll just let the work of art speak for itself. Are we finding that artists are more ready to talk to their own work?
Oh, you know, and that's what makes my day is to talk with an artist. In my studies, in a lot of the work that I do, and when I was doing my dissertation, my professor would always say to me, just listen to the artists because they're like philosophers. And, you know, as I took that to heart, and as I began working more with artists, of course, I've been working with artists most of my life, but I realized just that significant shift in focus is, yes, their art does speak, but, you know, how much do you get behind, how much do we actually know about the work if we don't speak to the artists? And, you know, if we listen to them from the perspective of a philosophical perspective, then I think we start to realize the enormous potential for reading their work. I mean, they give us the hint of how to read their work, but, you know, they're thinking about issues like you and I are thinking about, whether they're writers or whether they're scientists or news people. You know, they articulate that in words, but in their art, it goes a long way. So it's
absolutely,
just that connection is important.
We'll have to stop there. I'm sure that's right. I think that works of art can't stand on their own. They need to have an advocate, and the best advocate is the artist. But we'll have to stop there. Gerald, thank you for joining us. It's been lovely to talk to you on this
big
day.
Thank you. I really enjoy this. Thank you, and welcome everybody.
Gerald McMaster, he's the co-artistic director of the Biennale of Sydney. It opens today and it runs through until the 16th of September. And there are links to what's on our very own website.